A grand farewell to Darlington's man of the people. Hundreds paid tribute this week to long-serving Darlington greengrocer Robin Blair. Peter Barron was among them. As the hearse made its slow, sad approach to Darlington's grand old Victorian market, a round of applause echoed around a town centre stilled by the loss of its best-loved ambassador. You reap what you sow, and long-serving greengrocer Robin Blair received what his life of kindness richly deserved, a special send-off for someone who has touched countless lives. Such was Robin's popularity that his funeral had to be split into two venues, with hundreds of townsfolk having to make a choice of where to pay their respects to a man whose death, at 81, has inspired a huge outpouring of love. An estimated 500 chose to be at the covered market in time for 11 a.m. on Wednesday, when Robin was due to pay a final, poignant visit to the drafty building that has been home to the family business for more than 150 years. Hundreds more made their way to St Andrews at Houghton-le-Skern for an 11:30 a.m. service, which had to be broadcast into the graveyard for the benefit of those who overflowed from Darlington's oldest church. Newcomers to the town may well have been left wondering who in Darlington might warrant such a grand funeral, a statesman or perhaps someone with royal blood. Who'd have thought it would be a down-to-earth, green-fingered, white-haired, rosy-cheeked market stallholder, whose only regal connections were his royal gala apples and Jersey royal spuds? In his humble way, he'd have been surprised, but he would also have thought of it as the best send-off ever, said his daughter Alison, proudly wearing the British Empire medal that was presented to her dad in 2012 for services to the community. We weren't sure how many people would come, but this is amazing. We can't thank everyone enough. As a mark of respect, the market was closed for the day, but Robin was fondly remembered by customers at Banquo's Cafe as the 162-year-old clock tower ticked towards his 11 a.m. arrival. I was a customer, so was my mother and my nana before that, said Anita Carter over a cuppa. He was such a kind man. When he found out I was pregnant, he gave me 2 cartons of oranges at Christmas. And when my nana died, he arranged cover for himself so he could go to her funeral. He was such a gentleman who cared about his regulars and knew exactly what they wanted. Darlington's meant to be a market town, but the market's already lost so much. It had 3 fishmongers once upon a time, and it will be a very sad day if Robin's stall closes now that he's gone. Shirley Bell, a few tables down, shared the sense of loss. He was just someone who's always been there, wasn't he? The town won't be the same without him, she chipped in. Robin's connection to the market was unbreakable from the moment he made his first appearance as a baby, when his cot was parked under the family's fruit and veg stall. It had been founded by his grandfather Jack, then run by his son John Joseph, and Robin worked his first paid shift for a shilling when he was 5. While his late brother Keith managed the nursery at Barmpton Lane, on the outskirts of the town, Robin became the friendly face of the market, regularly getting up at 4 a.m. and working through to 11 p.m. Peter Wilson and Albert Nowicki, 2 of the council's former market managers, had also been drawn to the town centre to pay their respects. Peter, who had known Robin for 53 years, said, "He was a man for all people. He had time for everyone, and people respected his wisdom. The market was his spiritual home. He loved the place, he loved the people, and he loved his way of life." Albert described him as the strongest link between the town centre and the market. His influence was wider than just the market. It was the whole of the town centre. He was the voice the independent traders needed, and it was him they went to when they needed help or advice. When the cortege stopped outside in the sunshine, members of Robin's family, including daughter Alison and his wife of 51 years, Alwyn, did a walkabout among the well-wishers, saying thank you, shaking hands, and giving hugs. They were joined by Robin's grandchildren, Jamie and Louise, his great-granddaughter, Jessica, Jamie's wife, Joanne, and Alison's husband, Andy. "What are we going to do without him?" whispered Alwyn during our tearful embrace. Dave Gaskin, Robin's great friend for more than 40 years, and his loyal right-hand man at the market, wiped away tears of his own. "It can't ever be the same without him, but we enjoyed ourselves while it lasted. He'd be embarrassed to see the turnout, but proud at the same time," said Dave. Half an hour later, a few miles across town, Robin, with a homegrown cabbage given pride of place among the roses and dahlias on his coffin, was carried into a packed St. Andrew's church to the strains of Greensleeves. The Reverend Mark East praised Robin's immense contribution to the community, describing him as a special man who gave so much to others. A computer malfunction prevented us from hearing one of Robin's favourite songs, "All Kinds of Everything" by Dana. Gloriously old-fashioned, Robin would probably have dismissed the glitch with one of his knowing smiles. He never had much trust in modern technology. His faith was always in nature. He was someone who understood nature and the different seasons, the birthing, the flourishing, and the dying. He understood the cycle of life, added the vicar. Darlington MP Lola McAvoy, like so many of the mourners, had a personal experience of Robin to recount. For years, her granddad bought 24 red roses from Robin's stall to give to his wife on her birthday, Valentine's Day, and their wedding anniversary. "He was a beautiful man whose charm touched so many lives," added the MP. "He always had a twinkle in his eye, and I'm sure he would be smiling to see so many people celebrating his life. He's irreplaceable." For the next few months at least, Robin's market stall will continue to serve customers with fruit, veg, flowers and plants, while the family make a final decision on its future. Whatever happens, the spirit of such a well-loved local legend must surely live on in one of the country's oldest market towns. If there is to be a memorial bearing his name, perhaps a special floral tribute as a centrepiece of the market hall would be something he would have welcomed. Robin Blair should be remembered in his hometown by something that represents his lifelong passion for nature, something that's lovingly cared for, adds colour, gives people pleasure, and is bursting with life.
Tau Lawman wins life-changing BOTB £1 million prize, including Porsche. A down-to-earth army veteran says he's sticking with his plasterer's van and two-bedroom terrace despite winning a life-changing £1 million prize. Plasterer Paul Cholerton, 54, from Tau Law, choked back tears as he was told about the prize and said he was going to splash the cash on looking after his mum with dementia and a cruise for his son. And despite the massive win, Mr. Cholerton admitted that for now his life wasn't going to change too much, promising his boss at ASC Plasterers Limited that he wasn't going to quit and planning a new kitchen and roof for his home instead of a big move. Paul was still in his pyjamas when he was surprised first thing in the morning by BOTB presenter Christian Williams knocking on his door to break the good news. In a surprise that just kept on getting better, Christian first revealed Paul had won a Volkswagen GTI before reeling off the list of goodies, including a Porsche Cayenne GTS and £100,000 in cash. Amid stunned wows from the 54-year-old, he was also told he had won a new £800,000 house in Winchester. "There are no words to describe this feeling. I'm lost for words," Paul said as he celebrated the win with his brother Simon, who'd helped Christian spring the epic reveal. "I had a feeling and always hoped something good might be around the corner for me, but I never in a million years dreamt it would be this good." Paul said he had always enjoyed work but never really had much extra income and was now coming to terms with what the win would mean. "I have always wanted to take my son on a cruise, one of the best ones, as it has just been him and me for the last 12 years, but I couldn't afford it. Now I can," he said. Amid the excitement, Paul had to wake 17-year-old Elliot, who was still asleep and couldn't believe it when he saw his dad with the giant cheque. "I just had to keep repeating it is real," while he kept asking, "What is going on?" It was surreal, to say the least. The next stop was a visit to Paul's mum, who has dementia, to tell her the good news. "She is in a care home, but she is still aware of some things, and when I told her, she started crying, and this huge smile erupted. It was so lovely to see it bring her such sheer joy," he added. "She raised me and my brother alone and was on benefits, so didn't have much when it came to material things, but she filled our house with love and would have given her last penny to anyone in need. So I am glad this win will help me to make sure she is looked after and treated to something special too." Paul, who was in the army with his brother in the 1980s and 1990s and served in Northern Ireland, said he was happy with his plasterer's van and his home of 43 years. So at the moment he was inclined to take the cash alternatives to the prizes. "I might take some time to get used to all this, but the best thing I did was to just celebrate with a really lovely cup of tea."
The abandoned old County Durham road between Aycliffe and Hayington. A forgotten stretch of road in County Durham has been remembered by residents who used it before the route was realigned. The old section of Hayington Lane once carried traffic between Aycliffe Village and Hayington. It was later bypassed by the modern B6444, leaving the former road hidden among trees. Vehicles no longer use the old alignment, which now serves as a route for walkers, cyclists and horse riders. Despite becoming overgrown, much of the original road can still be followed between the area near Hayington railway station and the village. The abandoned stretch has attracted interest from enthusiasts who explore ghost roads, roads which have been bypassed, closed or left without a clear purpose. For many local people, however, it is remembered as part of an everyday journey. One horse rider said on a social media group, "I regularly use this lane on my horse. Lovely ride out. But I also remember when this was the Aycliffe Village to Hayington main road." Others recalled travelling along it before the bypass was constructed. A former Hayington signalman said he remembered the work being carried out, placing it in the late 1980s or early 1990s. Another resident remembered the original layout having a staggered junction and crossroads near the Hayington end. The old road is believed to have been bypassed as routes around Hayington, School Aycliffe and Aycliffe Village were improved. Its replacement created a more direct route for traffic while removing vehicles from the older lane. The old lane is also remembered by people who travel to Aycliffe Stadium for stock car racing. One former visitor said the road formed part of a regular Sunday journeys to the track, which closed around the end of the 1980s. The former road also runs close to one of County Durham's most important railway heritage sites. Historic England describes the former Hayington and Aycliffe station building as the world's first railway station. The Grade 2 listed building is on the route of the Stockton and Darlington Railway, which opened in September 1825. It was also at Hayington that George Stephenson's Locomotion No. 1 was placed on the rails before hauling the railway's pioneering passenger service. Much of the original Stockton and Darlington railway route remains part of the national rail network today. Although it no longer carries cars, Hayington's forgotten road has not vanished completely. It survives as a quiet reminder of how people once travelled between Aycliffe and the village before bypasses and modern road layouts changed the area.
Now for some football. Darlington beaten by Worksop 2-1 at Blackwell Meadows. Darlington failed to win on the opening day of the season for the fourth year in a row as they were beaten 2-1 by a well-organised Worksop side at Blackwell Meadows. They weren't helped by injuries to three players during the game, but they also gave away two soft close-range goals, one in each half, which they couldn't recover from. Goal scorer Max Howells, skipper Tom Platt and new signing Max Kilsby are all going to be out for a period of time, which is a big blow at this stage of the season. Manager Steve Watson said, "We didn't create enough and we weren't brave enough on the ball in the first half to play through the thirds. I was really frustrated with the way things panned out in the first half. We didn't create anything. The goal we gave away was criminal. We were more dynamic in the second half, but it was disappointing that we weren't more ruthless when we got the equaliser. We should have gone for the jugular and controlled the game. I thought once we equalised, Worksop settled for the point. We didn't show enough bravery and quality on the ball. The second goal was just as bad as the first. We conceded two goals right in the middle of the goal mouth. Everything seemed edgy for some reason. We lost the first game last season, but we went on to have a really good season. With the breeze at their backs, Worksop took control in the opening stages and went ahead on 11 minutes when Lewis Whittam crossed from the left and, as the Darlington defence hesitated on the 6-yard line, Kian Harrott touched the ball home. Within minutes, Quakers had to reorganise when Platt went off with a hamstring injury and Sam Hetherington replaced him in the centre of midfield. Worksop pushed for a second and Alex Starchenko was just wide from 25 yards. Quakers slowly got more into the game and Ellis Stanton saw a free kick saved by Max Durnley, who also denied Howells after he had danced through. That improvement continued after half-time. Mark Beck, making his third debut, had an effort from 10 yards deflected over the bar and from Paddy McLaughlin's right-wing corner, the ball came out to Howells, who kept his composure and fired home from 10 yards. But within minutes, Howells went off with a hamstring issue and Quakers lost their momentum. Worksop took advantage and regained the lead on the break when Liam Waldock pulled the ball back across goal for Whittam to tap in from a couple of yards. Aidan Rutledge came on for Hetherington and with his first action he nodded the ball down for Beck to turn quickly inside the area, but his left-footed effort went wide. New signing Tommy Bryant, who was freed by Newcastle during the summer, came on for his debut, but then there was more concern when Kilsby went down in his own area when going for a 50-50 and limped off injured. Quakers pushed forward in the closing minutes, but Worksop's well-organised defence didn't give anything away.